Welcome to the Bless Your Boys podcast. Bless Your Boys is the SB Nation site devoted to Tigers baseball. I'm your host, Brandon Day. I'm a staff writer and editor at Bless You Boys. And this is episode one, but I don't know, version 4.0 maybe of the Bless You Boys podcast under various names and aliases over the years. The we here is Ashley McLennan, who is also a staff writer and editor at Bless You Boys. Ashley, how's it going tonight?
Pretty good. I like to think of it not as like versions, but like doctors in Doctor Who, like we're, you know, regenerations. So we're not quite up to the Tennant level, but I think if this is the fourth one, we're the Tom Baker version of the Bless You Boys podcast, which makes us the best.
Oh, that would be the best? Okay, well,
I'm a Tennant fan. This got real nerdy all of a sudden.
That's all right. I can nerd out with the best of them, but I'm actually, like, I'm very bad on Doctor Who, apart from knowing who Karen Gillan is to almost an obsessive degree.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, cute redheads are, you know, yeah. Important.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're important to the world, especially when they're very tall. There's kind of a thing with super tall, like, redheaded young women in TV right now. It seems like Sophie Turner of Sansa Stark fame must be at least 6 feet tall as well. It's kind of an oddity.
Maybe it's like a genetic thing. If you have red hair, you also have to be very tall.
It's part of the ginger DNA.
It might be. Although I'm ginger and I am not tall, so...
I have freckles. And I'm about 6'1", but my red hair went away when I was little, so I think I'm only part ginger. That's what I tell people. I'm a hybrid.
That's terrible.
So, ostensibly, this is going to be a baseball podcast, but it's just been such a bleak offseason.
Going, it might just be a let's talk about tall redheads and Doctor Who podcast.
It might go better.
Might be more interesting than the current state of affairs of this friggin' off season. Pardon me. Yeah.
No, I think we're gonna go French. I mean, you know, you're Canadian, not necessarily of the French part. So I think we have an in with the French, and if we have to swear, we just will.
Are we bleeping it? Is that what we're doing? Is this the, or are we just gonna let it go? Are we just R-rated?
Yeah, I think it's gonna be R-rated. I mean, the Tigers really aren't safe for kids to watch right now, and so I feel like the podcast probably has to kind of match that. Safe
for anybody to watch right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like for a decade now, you know, we'd be sitting here like rolling through lists of free agents, like, you know, what's that final piece for the Tigers? You know, who's going to close?
We could legit be writing like, will the Tigers buy on Stanton? Like, where are they on Ohtani? And instead it's like, I don't know, which like seventh round draft pick dropped by the Phillies will they look at next week?
I know. And we didn't even want that guy, you know, like, you know, we were talking earlier, Mark Apple, you know, released by the Phillies, former number one pick by the Astros, and got DFA'd and no one picked him up. Just like disappears right back into the ether and the Phillies get to keep him apparently.
Yeah, that's surprising to me, actually. I honestly thought somebody would grab Apple. Like,
yeah, they haven't converted him to a reliever yet and tried that whole, you know, scheme. So, yeah, I kind of thought somebody might. Sometimes these things, though, are just like, I think Rob or Jackie was saying this as well. It's just that a lot of times, like, there's kind of a handshake deal or just everybody just kind of knows, like, all right, we're just going to let you keep that guy for whatever reason and not claim your poor former first-round draft pick that you traded Ken Giles for.
Yeah, that was a thing, too, with the Mariners last season. I can't remember who with, but it was definitely they let somebody on. They DFA'd someone, and I feel stupid for not remembering.
Oh, yeah. It was Leonidas Martin.
Yes, right. And we had even written posts about him possibly getting picked up, and nobody touched him. And I have to think that that was one of those quiet, like, back off, guys, just let us keep him kind of situations.
Yeah. Nobody gets hurt if you guys just let us keep Martin. But, yeah, you know, I think he's a minor league free agent. Well, I guess technically he's a major league free agent, but he's not going to get a major league contract, I would assume. No. So, yeah, which is too bad because he's, you know, he could have helped out. But as it turned out, you know, Mikey Mattu stepped into the void. And after Jacoby Jones got his face, or his lips at least, sheared off and did quite well. Yeah, that was a good time.
Exciting time to be a Tiger center fielder. Although, yeah, you're right. I think Mattek has been a pleasant surprise this season. Whether or not that's something that can be maintained is really questionable. But he certainly did better than his 2016 season with the Rays. So that kind of uptick is definitely a positive.
Yeah, it kind of felt like, you know, we finally, you know, he finally was healthy, and you kind of got to see what a little bit more experienced Mikey Mattu, who's been in the majors a few years now,
well, could, that could and do. He got more time to play, which I think was a big deal for him. Like, instead of just getting, you know, 50 games here and there throughout a season, he really did get an extended chunk, which, you're not rusty. So I think that helped a lot.
Yeah, yeah, just getting the reps. And maybe, you know, maybe just getting out of the trap, you know? I mean, the poor boy needed fresh air and...
You mean working on turf isn't good for you?
Yeah, I know. You know, the knee injuries out there.
I should make fun of the Trop. I can't do. I write for the Rays, and I'm a Rays editor too. So.
I know. I know. Well, I figured we'd get into the Rays at some point a little bit as well, because yeah, because of your like semi divided loyalties. But that's
it's yeah, so, like more definitely more Tigers focused, but I do work for the Rays Bay too, so I have to be a kind of nice about the Rays sometimes.
Yeah, I can be nice about the Rays because as you know, the whole organization there is just weird, but they still manage to produce a good team, you know, just about every year. And, you know, nobody grows pitchers better than they do. You know, they've got another big surplus sitting there.
Oh, Brandon, their farm.
I know. I mean, I think, you know, our prospect writer, Jay Markle, would pretty much just keel over and die if the Tigers were somehow able to acquire Brett Honeywell, which will never happen, but
it'll never happen. Cool. But I have this like beautiful theory, and this will never happen either, but this is like my off season dream. Because nothing has been happening, so I've been manufacturing ideas for things that we could do in the offseason, Tigers-wise.
Yeah.
I really, really want to trade Ian Kinsler to the Rays.
Oh, they could use Ian Kinsler.
Right? And I guarantee you the Rays are on his no-trade list, and I guarantee you he has no desire to play at the Trop. But, like, man, sending him there, you know you'd get a quality return. He would be a great fit for their infield. He would be a great fit for their batting order. Like, I just see that trade working so beautifully for both parties. But you know he doesn't want to go there. Like, no, I don't know what his 10 teams are, but, you know.
It's, yeah.
But.
Yeah, odds are pretty good. I mean, it's just messed up. You know, hopefully they can get that sorted out because, you know, there's so much to like down there. Kevin Cash is a really good manager. You know, Jim Hickey's gone now to the Cubs to follow his boy Joe Maddon. But, you know, they've been so good at developing their own pitching. And they seem, you know, and they seem to manage to turn it into the bats that they need just about every year. They're just always like that little bit short. And I don't know. I wonder if they're going to trade, if Archer is even like really under consideration to get traded. But you just look at that pitching staff with all the young guys like Jacob Feria. They still got Odorizzi. They've got Blake Snell. They've got Honeywell coming. It's just,
yeah, I think Odorizzi is going to get traded this offseason, but you'll still have, I mean, Cobb's gone now too. So there's, but you've got the guys coming up. You're right. Like your Honeywell's, Feria was great last season when he was healthy. And he's got a real bright future ahead of him with that organization. So Archer is a question mark because he's been real good. But when he's in there too long, like past seven innings or even at that seven inning mark, he starts to really falter. So I feel like they might, if they got the right return, do well to get rid of Archer. Like, I hate to say that because he's such a cornerstone of that team right now. But if you can get something good that you can build on, I don't know why you don't do it.
Yeah, you know, there's just so much control still left on him. You know, don't they have him until, like, I don't know, it seems like they've still got, like, 4 or 5 more years. I think they've got him until 2020.
2019 or something.
Oh, I'm on Spot Track. It says, yeah, it says 2021.
2021, oh, man. You would.
And he's going to make, like, $7-8 million a year he's going to be making the next couple of years. That's a valuable, valuable asset.
Yeah, you don't trade that unless you get something real good in return. I mean, that's like us holding on to, like, the Tigers holding on to Fulmer longer, right? Like, I mean, at most, what's he going to get? $11 million in 2021 with his team option.
Yeah,
so,
with the option and bonuses and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I say I don't think the Rays are going to do anything with Archer.
Yeah, if I was them, I'd hang in there because they've got all these young pitchers. And, you know, they've kind of had a habit from David Price and James Shields on to now of kind of having that one veteran, you know, I'll put ace in quotation marks because sometimes they're not necessarily an ace, by the way I would frame it. But, you know, Archer's an experienced guy. He's a smart guy. He's super likable. But he's also just, like you said, that dude that, you know, like he'll go out there and strike out 10 in the first 5 innings and then just fall apart for an inning or two. He'd be a really interesting candidate to be like that guy who pitches like every third or fourth day. And you just give him like,
four innings.
Yeah, you just turn them loose to just mow everybody down, you know, take over from one of your young starters. They'll never do that, of course, but...
Now we're slowly turning into the Tampa Bay Rays podcast, but I think they have a new pitching coach down there, too. Like, a lot of their staff got turned over this offseason already, and I think that'll be interesting when you have a new pitching coach in there. Like, I want to say it's one of the guys from Durham, but... Don't quote me on that. I'm just pulling that right out of thin air.
Yeah, I can't really recall either. But this whole conversation just does speak to kind of what we've all been going through with having to sort of find like a secondary team to root for. And everyone, of course, had an easy time choosing the Astros in the off or in the postseason and watching Verlander go to work. And that was great. But you know, now I'm really personally like having to come to terms with spring training without Justin Verlander. And I know it's gonna suck. Like I haven't really totally absorbed this yet. It's gonna be worse, I think, this spring.
It's gonna be hard because, I mean, really, what were we doing? It was, he got traded very end of August, so we missed five Verlander starts with the Tigers.
Yeah,
I don't think that any of us really had an opportunity to kind of absorb how real that trade is, because we still got to see him play, right? He's out there, he's wearing blue and orange, and, you know, he's pitching every fifth day and he's dominating. And I think a lot of people just glommed onto that because it was easy to root for him and finally getting his World Series ring. But I think, yeah, you're right. Once we hit spring training, it's going to be like, okay, so the boys are back, but where's Verlander?
Yeah, it's going to be all the boys and very few of the men.
Yeah, oh gosh.
Yeah, because, you know, you got to figure they're going to find, you know, somebody's going to wise up here and trade for Ian Kinsler and maybe try to extend him for a year or two. You know, you're still looking at one of the, if not the best defensive second baseman in the game.
He should have won the Gold Glove this year.
Oh, he absolutely should have. You know, but the Gold Gloves, of course, being what they are. And, you know, I can't really...
It's like you just throw darts at boards and pick somebody. Like, they say that it has nothing to do with offensive production, but it does. And if you looked at purely defensive numbers, Kinsler should have had it far and away. But, you know.
Yeah, which is fine. And it's just, you know, it's just that thing. We're all used to having this conversation. We have this conversation about the Gold Gloves every year. And it's just at a certain point, you wish they would just decide like, you know, what if we just made that award what we said it was and just made a defensive award? But
right? Like, yeah, it's for great defense, except we factor in like all of this other stuff now. So it's really just who we decide to pick that year.
Yep. Who's the hotness at second base? And obviously this year it was Altuve, and you know, I've got no beef with Jose Altuve winning any awards that they want to give him, because the guy is just incredible. It's just bananas to see such a little guy play this good.
But Brian Dozier won it this year.
Oh my God, that's right.
Dozier won the Gold Glove.
That's why it was even worse. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it wasn't even like Dustin Pedroia was the other third finalist. I could almost like, I mean, Pedroia, I think, has won it something insane like four or five times.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, Kinsler had it above them, which makes me a little crazy. But, you know, Brian Dozier.
I know, you know, and then, you know, Paul Molitor won Manager of the Year. So yeah, the Twins did pretty well in the awards category. It's weird. It's like they were kind of treated as like, they weren't expected to do anything, and they made this nice little run. But to anybody else looking, it's like, this is the team that's, you know, this is the team that's building and up and coming. You know, they've got a lot of pretty good young talent there. It's not
yeah, your Buxtons, your Keplers, and your...
Yeah, Jose Berrios, you know, they've got a little ace in the making, maybe. They've got Miguel Sano crushing dingers at third and getting into fights with James McCann.
Yeah.
You know, when I think back over the season, like, the things that actually stand out to me are mostly those incidents, like Jacoby Jones getting hit in the face and McCann and Sano squaring off, and then the Miggy brawl with Austin Romine. Yeah, those are kind of like the high points of the season for me.
Which just really says something about the season, that like the things that stopped a game were the most exciting moments.
I know. Save us from this Tigers baseball. Please take us away from all this death.
Speaking of that, I thought it was really funny. I don't know who posted it. It was a Jamer Candelario posted an off-season workout video, and he tagged it in Spanish. But I totally mispronounced, like, I misinterpreted, like, the thing, but it meant, like, the dead season.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, work never stops in the dead season was the translation. So that's my new favorite term for the off season, is just calling it the dead season.
The dead zone. Yeah. Whereas initially we were all like, What is he saying? Like he's gonna work till he drops? Is
Yeah, I thought
that what
like
this
he was
is?
temporarily dead from a hard workout or something, because temporada, I totally forgot, meant season, and not temporary.
Yeah, or some kind of a Dune thing where, fear is the little death that, et
Yeah.
cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I can go into the litany against fear. We won't do that. This could
We're
turn
gonna
into
just
a
like
Dune
block out
podcast too.
this Dune podcast, and then I'll be really out of my depth.
Oh, too bad, because yeah, I could talk about Dune quite a bit. That's one of my favorite books
No,
for sure.
I'm shocked.
I
I'm
know.
shocked.
I know. You know what's weird though is I'm not like a sci-fi guy at all. I was like I went to school to be a super snobby literature nerd. And I've got that side down there as well, but
I have an English literature degree as well.
yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
So
I.
if people want to ask questions about, about books or, about Proust and Kafka and whatnot, feel free to mix those in next week.
The meter of Emily Dickinson.
Oh, scintillating, scintillating podcast material.
I know people will be thrilled.
Yep.
We'll come back every week.
But okay, let's go back to Kinsler though, because if you had to guess right now, who do you think Ian Kinsler is going to end up getting traded to?
I think it's going to be the Brewers.
Yeah, that's a good choice. And I
If
would love
yeah,
to get in their
the
farm
Brewers or the
system.
Angels are really the two most logical. And see, that's where it's tough, because I mean, if I were him, I'd rather go to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean he and Justin Upton are pretty good friends, it
Yeah.
seems like.
And
And
it's hard to say, because I mean, with what the Angels are doing now, I feel like they could really make something next year, especially now that they've signed Upton to an extension and you get a guy like Kinsler in there at second base, because they don't really have anybody at second that is even worth remarking on.
yeah, and it's the same at third base, which is why a lot of people think Moustakas might go out that way. And maybe if they sign Moustakas and something broke here, which nothing has broken in free agency or anywhere else so far,
Man,
really.
it's Stanton. Stanton's holding everything up.
Yeah, and possibly Ohtani too. But I think yeah, Kinsler in Los Angeles makes sense to me. I just wonder about that team. That the pitching there is so. Is still so fragile, it seems to me. Like they managed to kind of cobble together that bullpen last year, but I don't know if he's going to quite view them as enough of a contender to go there or not.
And
But the Brewers would be interesting.
that's a big factor. You're right. I think it's gonna him. He's gonna look at it less as a location thing, because I mean, no matter where you go, half of the year you're on the road anyway.
Yeah.
And I think he's really gonna look at it in terms of which team can really build that winning year. And the Brewers and the Angels both had a good year. The Brewers, I think, surprised everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that they could put something together. And I think Kinsler would be a really big piece of that.
Yeah, it seems like that's the kind of guy that they should be looking for at this point, because the farm system is stacked. A lot of people, did kind of think like, there's an outside chance, they could make a wild card this year. And they were pretty good in the first half while Eric Thames was mashing dingers everywhere, but and that was fun. But yeah, that does seem like the right move for them is to get an experienced, kind of hard-nosed veteran guy in there who can kind of like show people the ropes, keep people motivated. Because even Kinsler himself wasn't motivated in the second half playing with the Tigers, as he said, which is hard to believe. I mean, that tells you how bad it is when Ian Kinsler is kind of like, eh, I love to play the game, I'm going out there, but yeah, the energy wasn't quite there.
You
It's a bad feeling.
could tell that from a lot of them. I mean, even before Verlander was traded, he was making some statements to the press that were like, as long as I'm here, I'm going to keep going out there and trying to win. But you definitely didn't get that vibe of, yeah, we're here and we're excited to play. And I mean, it's tough to get that excitement when you're going towards a 100 loss season. And I mean, they didn't quite do that badly, but it was tough to watch it all, because and even afterwards, Kinsler said some stuff about how he would stick around for a rebuild. And I totally think he would, but at the heart of him, I think he wants to go to a team that has that competition and that drive to actually do well.
Yeah.
And I think you'd see much better performance out of him in that environment.
I think so too. The thing about Kinsler is that he's probably, I mean, he's held up extremely well physically. He's still one of the best athletes, or he still was one of the best athletes on the team this year. And he kind of had, he had those groin strain issues early in the season, and he did play in the World Baseball Classic, which for an older player, seems like it might be a little bit, kind of an extra kind of wearing factor as the season goes on, and you kind of started playing really hard earlier in the year than everybody else did. So I could easily see him bouncing back, and, you know, and having another good year or two. And then maybe, when he's, you know, 38, 39, maybe he takes a year where, okay, he's going to be just like the veteran mentor, Carlos Beltran type
guy.
He'll
be the Corey Hunter.
Yeah, screaming at everybody on the bench and stuff like that, yeah. But exactly. Far less smiley and way more trolly, yeah.
Can't wait for grouchy old man Kinsler to be sitting on the bench, spitting his seeds.
Yeah.
He's already halfway there.
I know. He's a salty man, Ian Kinsler. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, he's been a lot of fun. You know, when we traded for him, you know, like my impressions of him were just kind of about who he was as a player. It's been really fun having Ian Kinsler on the Tigers. He's just been that one guy who's just like, you just know he's just kind of a savage out there and wants to win and super gritty. He's the grit master.
Yeah, he's old school. He's like vintage gamer. Like, he could easily be plopped on a field in like 1930 and fit right in with those guys.
Yeah, Ian Kinsler could walk out of the cornfield,
start
taking hacks immediately, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, so the other, you know, the other topic as far as trades go, you know, I keep hearing this on the site, and I know, you know, I talked to a lot of people on Twitter, I talked to some of the Detroit media and stuff, and I don't really see any reason to think that Michael Fulmer is going to get traded. But do you think that's something that the Tigers should do this offseason, or do you think that's something to consider down the road? I mean, we've still got 5 years of control on him at this point, and you never know, that could get us back into, you know, the time when the Tigers are good again, hopefully.
I got a lot of flack for writing a post about this, Brent.
I know. I didn't bring this up for no reason.
Very specifically that I think it's a stupid idea to trade Michael Fulmer right now. Now, with the caveat, because people apparently read that headline and decided not to read the article, that yes, they'd be stupid not to listen, but I hate this concept that you trade a current Michael Fulmer for the projected concept of three Michael Fulmers down the road. Like, Fulmer is under contract until 2021, I think. And, like, why would you dump a guy who's just building into how good he could be when he will still be under team control by the time that we're hoping to be competitive again?
Yep, I totally agree, actually. You know, I mean, yeah, there's always the caveat, you know, like, okay, if the Yankees call and offer us, like, Gleyber Torres, Clint Frazier, two more good prospects, like, okay, fine. And in that unreasonable situation, then, yeah, maybe you think about it. But I agree. One Michael Fulmer in the hand is better than three Michael Fulmers in the bush.
Yes. Like I said, it's, you have to listen. And I think Al Avila knows that to not listen means you're not getting the offers that you might want down the road. And it'll also let him know who teams are willing to talk about, which is good.
Yeah.
Because knowing that helps down later months, like towards the next trade deadlines, when he's like, all right, well, I know, you know, the Dodgers are willing on these three guys, and I know these teams have offered up this before. So he knows, and he's playing it smart. But I think unless, like, the skies open up and you get offered, you know, two top 10 guys and a couple of, like, you know, double A players, you don't take that trade.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. And, you know, and the thing is, you know, people just have to realize, like, as fun as it's been to watch Michael Fulmer, there's still, you know, there's still issues with him beyond, like, the surgery he had, which is just to the nerve transposition surgery to move the nerve, which, as far as surgeries go, is as minor as it gets for a pitcher's arm. It's not a big deal. But he's still a guy who hasn't really shown the ability to strike a lot of people out. And, you know, advanced organizations are going to look at that and still kind of wonder if he's going to find that strikeout touch and if he's still going to be able to kind of keep the ball in the yard when he's given up as much contact as he does. I mean, right now I'd kind of argue that he throws hard enough and has such a nasty pair of fastballs that guys get themselves out early in counts a lot of the time. And maybe that's part of the reason why the strikeouts aren't there, but he still kind of has like that hard slider that doesn't really break quite enough to be like a legit swing and miss pitch all the time. And I think, you know, I'd rather see him kind of come in and work with Chris Bosio, the new pitching coach, and kind of see if maybe he can get a little bit of that going. If he can put together another 200 inning strong season, then maybe you can kind of start to leverage those huge prospect packages. But I just can't see how you're going to get those kind of offers right now for a guy who didn't have the, you know, the best of years, even though, you know, it was only his second year in the league. But, you know, it just doesn't feel like he's at max value. And that's what it comes down to is, you know, trading guys when their value is at the peak.
Yeah.
Which brings me to Nick Castellanos, because he's another one in that sort of band who's, you know, he's young enough to possibly still be a part of the Tigers' future 3 or 4 years down the road when they've hopefully got things turned around. But I get the feeling a lot of people kind of feel like the Tigers should cash him in as well for, you know, the next, you know, probably Dowell Lugo type, you know, sort of 45 future value, not really a future, you know, major league regular probably type prospect. And I don't really see the point there either, which I wrote earlier in the year that they should extend him, you know, for that reason and try to wait till he gets into his prime.
I care so little about what the Tigers do with Nick Castellanos. Like, I'm as long as they get him off third, really, that's... And the move of him out into right field makes a lot of sense. He was just such a disaster defensively that it really put a damper on any kind of, like, offensive streaking that he did.
Yeah.
And because it made his... Any value he had at bat really suffer because of just how bad he was at third base.
Yeah, and it wasn't like the kind of like, ah, that was kind of a tough play. It was just, you know, way too many times, just like a complete, you know, he actually, you know, Nick Castellanos occasionally would make a really nice play, like bare hand pick, guns
the
guy down.
But then you're like, oh my god, he actually knows how to play baseball? Like, it was like...
And then he just flat out whiff a grounder right past him.
It was so staggering that you'd be like, what did I just see? Like, is this a miracle? And how, like, and... Then it would just fall apart an inning later. And, like, honestly, I feel like my animosity towards Nick Castellanos would fade entirely if we would just put him out in right field, let him hit, you know, 37 dingers in a season, and just leave him there.
Yeah.
Let that be the Nick Castellanos story.
You know, I think, you know, people are happy, definitely happy to see him off third. And, you know, putting him in right field, yeah, I mean, seems like the safest bet. You know, one of the interesting things that came out is that, you know, Nick Castellanos is, I think he actually ranked faster than Cameron Maben this year in StatCast sprint speed. And so you'd think, like, he's got, you know, he's got the running ability, you know, to play in the outfield and be fine. But he's just, baseball is just such a weird game, and the dichotomy between the hand-eye coordination involved in playing defense versus hitting just sometimes doesn't make any sense. Like, you would just think, like, you know, Jose Iglesias can just sit there all day and wait for your best pitch because he can get his bat on anything, and he just can't. He can't wait for your best pitch. He's going to just flail at anything because he can put the bat on it. And, you know, Nick, you know, hits more line drives than anybody, you know, has this, like, great contact profile that I do think eventually is going to produce 30, 35 home runs a year. And I would like to have that bat even as a DH, you know, down the road because, you know,
He's got future DH stamped all over him.
He does, yep.
The problem is the Tigers have a lot of those.
Yeah, we've got quite a few. Christian Stewart is coming.
Yep. You've got Miguel Cabrera. Like, these are guys that are going to be, you know, vying for that DH spot. But I think the reason that Nick is going to do really well out and right is you got to look at somebody like JD Martinez. And a lot of, because JD is also not a great defensive player. And that becomes really obvious when you see him. But he's going to get paid over $150 million this offseason to play somewhere where he'll ultimately probably end up being a DH one day, like Boston, where they need the next, you know, David Ortiz. And so if somebody like JD, who's also terrible defensively, can really shine there, and I'm not saying Nick is nearly as good offensively as JD Martinez, but I think he's going to do a lot better for himself in a position where his terrible defense is not going to be the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. It's just gotta be so hard, you know, to go out there and just bomb defensively at third base, you know, get defensively replaced in close games and then have to kind of keep going back out there and doing it day after day and then get up there and believe in yourself as a hitter. You know, I think, you know, there's some impressive resiliency there, I think, in Nick. And I'm going to try to be optimistic that he can at least, you know, not be a disaster in right field, because I do believe in Nick Castellanos as a hitter. And I think at some point down the road, we are going to look at him as a pretty similar hitter to JD Martinez, like a guy who still strikes out 20% of the time or more, Maybe, hopefully, we'll learn to draw a few more walks as he hits for power and pitchers get a little bit more scared of him. But yeah, I could see Nick hitting 35, 40, especially if you move him to Arizona. I mean, God, JD Martinez was, I mean, he was a monster here, but when he was, man, I watched him in Arizona quite a bit and it was terrifying. Every ball he hit in the air went out. It just seemed like he could not miss.
Yeah, he was a monster. And I think, too, changing the defensive position will make him more appealing trade-wise later on down the road.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about where are we going to put him.
Yeah, if you don't choose to keep a guy like that, that at least if you put him somewhere where his flaws are less obvious, then his offensive production becomes the thing that people see more, and it definitely it creates more of a market for him later on.
Yeah, which is why I really would like to make the bet on him right now and extend him for like 5 years at like 10, maybe 12 million a year if you had to do it, just so that when that bat does come, and I'm going to just bet on him, you know, being able to play a decent right field and hope that, you know, if he's able to do that, you've got him for 5 years control pretty cheap. And if that bat really does turn into that, then suddenly you've got a much more valuable commodity than just selling JD for, you know, 2.5 months, which as we saw, and however you want to feel about Alavila's handling of it, you know, we didn't really get a whole lot back. You know, Lugo is probably going to be in, you know, kind of a fringy second baseman, maybe a utility infielder that can hit a bit. But, you know, that's not really an impact player. So, yeah, we didn't really get what we were hoping there. Although they did very well in the Justin Verlander trade, I think, which kind of helps alleviate some of that, hopefully.
Yeah, and I think with the Justin Wilson, Alex Avila trade, we did pretty darn well with that, too.
Yeah.
Like considering how Wilson did with the Cubs after that trade.
Yeah, I mean, he just absolutely bombed. It was bad. And actually, Alex Avila didn't really play all that well for them either.
He didn't really get a lot of opportunity to, though. He wasn't in a lot. Like, he was very much relegated behind Wilson Contreras to
that's true. Being
that second string guy. So I think that didn't help his situation at all.
And he was always going to cool. Yeah, he was always going to cool down somewhat. I mean, he was murdering the ball the whole first half, and it was glorious.
Yeah. I mean, like, okay, here's my question, because I know you're going to say no, and I just want to bring it up. Do we re-sign him?
Oh, I would say yes, actually. But I don't like James McCann behind the plate. I just don't.
No, I don't either.
And I think, you know, people think I hate James McCann. I don't hate James McCann. I actually predicted last year, you know, by looking at his contact profile, like, he's got more to offer offensively, and I think he kind of showed some of that this year, but he's just not the guy that I think is strong enough behind the plate and in terms of game calling and stuff to really build around. And I kind of worry that he kind of hurts our pitchers and some of the development of some of our younger pitchers as well. I don't know. I know James McCann is probably a savage and works super hard at his framing and his blocking. So maybe, you know, maybe things will come along, but you know, he had Brad Ausmus as his manager, you know, for 3 years, and he didn't really seem to make much progress behind the plate. So I'm not optimistic there at all. I'm very, very happy that the Tigers got Jake Rogers in that Verlander deal.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I don't like McCann as a framing pitcher, as a framing catcher for pitchers. I think that you could almost, and I don't have the patience to break it down, but I think if you compare games that Avila caught versus games that McCann caught, it would make a very interesting breakdown of how the pitchers did in those games.
Yeah, and it is really hard to judge that, and that's why it's hard to write like a definitive article kind of on that topic. I mean, I can just quote, you know, like their framing numbers all day. And you know, Alex Avila's not that good a framer either, but he's just got so much more experience back there. He's just smoother behind the plate still for me at this point. And yeah, I'd like to get him back and see if, you know, he takes the off season. You know, starts feeling strong, gets that Alex Avila swole going. And
get the big beard.
Yeah, gets the super dark, you know, like light eating beard going in the spring and just, you know, hits the crap out of the ball. Yeah, and then we just, you know, and then we just trade him for another Heimer Candelario.
I love that idea of bringing Alex Avila back through the beginning of every season and then trading him at the July deadline if he does well.
Yeah, I know. You know, I saw Alex Avila and JD Martinez always in the offseason seem to be fishing down off Miami, and I know Alavila's a fisherman as well. And you know, Alex Avila can just be, you know, he's just our chum. You know, we put him out there. He looks tasty, you know, the first half, and then you just reel in another fat prospect with him every year.
I think his boat is even called the off season or something like that. Like,
oh yeah, that's right. I think you're right about that.
Something goofy about like an off season. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, still love that guy. So yeah, you know, the only other really things to watch, you know, until kind of this whole free agent quandary kind of, or dam breaks, and we start seeing some movement as, you know, the Tigers did a couple things. They signed some minor league free agents. They got Ryan Carpenter and Kevin Comer, who are two pitchers that I really liked as far as minor league free agents go, which is kind of a shallow pool. But so they got those guys, and then we're going to have, you know, the first selection of the Rule 5 draft. So in another week or two, you know, we'll be ramping up, you know, who we should take in that. But other than that, we're going to end up waiting for the leavings. To go back to the fishing metaphor, you know, we're just going to be, you know, picking the random bits of flesh out of the water after all the sharks have fed.
Yeah. Little floaty bits.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised. I was rooting for the Tigers to pick up Doug Fister again. Like, I really like the idea of the team getting a couple of old school Tigers players back in the mix.
Yeah.
Not particularly because I think they'll do great things for the team, but I think even just from a butts in seats perspective, having players whose names you recognize starting every couple of days, or, you know, throw a Granderson out in center field, or, you know, bring back one of those guys. I think from a fan perspective, it's going to do so much in the way of making up for these names that nobody knows.
Yeah.
And kind of down seasons, just to have a guy that you can, like, whose jersey you already have in your closet, you know?
Yeah, at least, yeah, someone that people can kind of recognize and root for. You know, it is going to be a tough go, and that is the kind of thing the Tigers probably are going to have to think about a little bit. It'll be interesting to see what attendance is like next year, because I know it, you know, it cratered at the end of last year, and it was down a lot this season. I don't really know if it can go much lower without, you know, another couple really bad years going by, but you know, they're going to put it to the test. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
All I can say is I was sitting behind home plate, you know, in September for like $15, and that was, you know, that was kind of awesome.
Well, I mean, it's great for you, but like, then you got poor Al Avila's writing these letters to season ticket holders going, please, please, God, don't drop your season tickets. We need you. It's sad. It's, you look at like what they broke, insane, like 3 million attendance,
yeah,
for 2 or 3 years in a row.
Yep.
And now they're going to be like StubHubbing tickets for $6 a pop.
Yeah, it is. It's sad. I mean, I can't really say I feel particularly bad for the Tigers or Chris Illich or Al Avila, but just for the whole organization and the fans. Yeah, it's just such a, you know, a tough time to go through after, you know, a whole decade where like every year you thought like, okay, you know, there's a chance if we just come up with that right, you know, combination of bullpen arms, or this guy, you know, comes up from the minors and works out, that's, you know, that's it. We've got a chance. And
yeah,
it's going to be a few years until we get back to that point, at least. Although I don't know, I'm probably a little more optimistic than some are about that. Obviously a lot of people are just flat out just mad, and everything the Tigers do is idiotic, and the Tigers, you know, deserve all the suffering in the world, you know, and that crowd is going to just have to take some time to kind of like, you know, vent their spleen and kind of get over it, and we'll
they'll just be mad for a long, I mean, there's always going to be the rowdies on Twitter yelling about everything.
Yep, exactly. You know,
I know, I'm with you. I think 2020, 2021, I think there's a solid chance. I don't think we're going to see it in 18 or 19.
Yeah.
But like, I've got a good feeling about 2020, Brandon.
Yeah, so do I. I like a lot of the guys in the farm, and I, you know, I know we need a couple bats, and obviously we need a middle infield, and that's kind of where the weakness is. You know, and they traded for Isaac Paredes, who's a pretty good looking hitting prospect who plays shortstop, but he's probably not going to stick there either. But you know, the Tigers' payroll is going to be really low. You know, you can always add that one piece that you need in free agency, assuming, yeah, Chris Illich will spend at least a reasonable amount, which I believe he will when the time is right. So yeah, you know, you signed Verlander in 2020, you know, maybe you signed Carlos Correa in 2021, 22, whatever that is.
Now, yeah, I do see Verlander coming back.
I do too, actually.
I absolutely see him finishing his career with the Tigers in like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I believe that will happen. I hope I'm not disappointed there, because I would really like that. It wouldn't surprise me if Verlander was still like a reasonably good pitcher till he's 42. He's got a, you know, he's got a slider now, which is really good, that he never had before. And so even when the velocity starts to fall, yeah, you know, he's learned a lot. He may still be able to kind of battle through these things. If Bartolo Colon can pitch till he's 42, I got to think, or 43 or 4 or whatever Bartolo is.
I think we should sign him next year.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that would be fun, you know, just for the heck of it. And then just try to flip him at the deadline if he's, you know, halfway
decent. I have a philosophy about Bartolo Colon. It's a whole plan. He should hire me as his manager. I think that, like, so between him and Major League Baseball, they should arrange it so that he can pitch for every single team next year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so then he can retire at the end of the season having pitched for every team in baseball.
Yep, and then they just present him with like a golden suitcase with every team's sticker kind of stamped on it, like old
something like that. Yeah, exactly.
Steamer trunk situation.
Yeah, that's my thing. I think that there should be a Bartolo Colon farewell tour and that he should get to pitch for every single team.
Yep. I like it. I like this idea. I'll just kind of pass him around like a tchotchke.
Sounds like we need viewership numbers up. Why not?
Yep. You know, and people, you know, people love Bartolo. People out there listening to the podcast right now are just like, oh, God, please don't you dare bring Bartolo Colon back. But sometimes when you write about baseball for, okay, a very slender portion of your living, but, you know, you need some grist for the mill. And, you know, right now there's just like, oh, there's just nothing interesting. I mean, I need like Daniel Norris, like getting, you know, attacked and fighting off a great white shark while surfing, you know, like something like that needs to happen, you know, fairly shortly before we all go crazy.
Yeah. It's so boring. Like today I got excited because Jason Kipnis posted a bunch of like stories on his Instagram feed about keeping a woman from walking into traffic.
Ugh.
Like this is the excitement of my off season is that like Jason Kipnis might be a hero.
Yep. I know. And you would love that. I'm curious about Jason Kipnis, actually. I'm very curious to see, like, how teams kind of look at him after seeing him play center field a bit. And, you know, knowing that, like, he has, like, that Ryan Rayburn, like, up-down thing where every other year he's awesome and then he just kind of goes in the tank for a year. It's kind of weird. So I'm curious. I'm very curious to see where Mr. Kipnis winds up.
I'm mostly curious about this Royals, like, exodus.
Yeah.
Because you got, like, Moustakas and you got Hosmer and nothing is happening. And I worried for Hosmer that the start of the 2017 season was really going to put a damper on his future prospects.
Yeah, it was a rough
go. Like, the Royals did so bad at the start of the season last year, and I thought that with those guys hitting free agency at the end of the season that none of them were going to get what they thought they were going to get.
Yeah, and I also expected, that, you know, most of them would get traded at the deadline, and instead they didn't trade anyone.
Yeah. But I think Hosmer was like laughably looking for a 10-year contract, and that's definitely not happening at this point.
Yeah, it has been really fun and hilarious listening to Scott Boras like up his like heroic, epic poet style rhetoric about Eric Hosmer and JD Martinez and how they deserve, you know, $200 million and all this stuff so far. I really don't know what to think about that. Things are so stalled right now, but I know they're not getting that much.
No, I want to give Scott Boras his own talk show.
I know, Scott Boras might as well have, you know, the funny thing, too, is that people hate Scott Boras, and I don't care in the slightest, you know, like, I want the players, I'd rather have the players, you know, earn the money than the owners get it. You know, the day the owners decide that if they can cut their payroll, they'll lower ticket prices, I'll start rooting against Scott Boras, but until that point, I don't really care, you know, he's just sort of an entertaining sideshow.
Yeah, he's just a weird little number magician who can make insane contracts appear.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, like, some of the pitches that he must make. Like, you know, Eric Hosmer has never graded out well defensively. He rarely has even been a plus, you know, a strongly plus hitter. He had a really good year this year by the time it wrapped up. But, you know, Eric Hosmer doesn't really have the track record, and especially as a first baseman, to bring more than, like, you know, 5 years, $18 million per, like a 590 deal. And he's asking, you know, $200 million. It seems like on the basis that, well, he won a World Series and he's imbued with, you know, special grit magic and, you know.
Special World Series magic. I think Boras is still high on the Max Scherzer deal and believes that he can make that happen every time. I think that is honestly, he's just like, look, I made this happen once.
Yeah. Look at this miracle I performed.
Yeah.
Although that didn't turn out to be a miracle. That turned out to be very reasonable.
Yeah, that turned out to be the Nats going, all right, we were worried about this for a second, but now we've got this back-to-back Cy Young winner in our midst who was just dominant.
Yep. I know Max has been incredible there. And, you know, I'm, like, kind of happy for him, but I also always have had, like, a weird, like, you know, I'm, like, I'm the world's biggest Verlander homer. Like, that's my favorite baseball player of all time. So I always kind of like when Max was starting to take over from Verlander a little bit, I was always a little bit like, I was always resistant. So I'm always kind of like,
your sister starts getting prettier.
Yeah, exactly. I just couldn't quite, I could never quite love him as much as Verlander. So, but I've been happy for him to do well. Yeah, absolutely.
I was a huge Scherzer fan. Huge. But then I also knew that he was going to get traded. So when I bought my Scherzer jersey, I got the All-Star version. So I got like the All-Star game Scherzer jersey. So I had something that would still translate well.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, you thought ahead. Yeah, I guess there was no chance at that point. Yeah, like once he passed on the offer, you know, before the season, you know, Mike Ilitch was probably, you know, I assume waxed sorely pissed about that and not going to make him a bigger offer.
Yeah,
and
it was a
he screwed up there. Yep, he screwed up right there. We could have kept this thing going.
Yeah, I'm sure Max Scherzer would have been the one piece. Not the fact that we had him and Porcello and Verlander and Price and good Anibal Sanchez in 2013, and we still didn't win anything.
I know. It's just that, you know, then we went right back out and spent the money on Jordan Zimmerman and Mike Pelfrey and Justin Upton anyway. So, yeah, well, yeah. Water under the bridge now, I guess. You have to wait a couple years.
Know, if the Nationals are listening and they would like a Jordan Zimmerman back,
yeah,
the Tigers are more than welcome to be open to that trade.
Yeah, Rob leapt on that rumor very quickly, and that post hit the site almost the instant I saw the Nick Cafardo rumor.
But like, yes, please take him back.
Right, exactly. Like, quick, write this article before Nick Cafardo retracts that statement. And it's like, oh, I was totally mistaken. I don't know. That sounds crazy. I'm sorry. I don't know who wants Jordan Zimmerman. Probably nobody.
It's fine. Probably meant Ryan Zimmerman, and everyone was just like, oh, let's write a post about this anyway.
Yep, exactly. So, all right. So, you know, next week, you know, we'll be getting closer to the Rule 5 draft. Maybe we'll start talking a little bit more about that, and we'll probably start talking about the coaching staff here a little bit as we start to get a little bit closer, at least to, like, Tiger Fest and those guys actually making some appearances in public. But the last thing I really wanted to get into was, you know, the two big stories that we're all kind of waiting for to hit is Giancarlo Stanton to be traded, probably, and for Shohei Ohtani to decide where he wants to go. And I'm gonna, let's take Ohtani first. I mean, the whole situation is interesting because he's not going to be paid very much. I mean, the collective bargaining agreement and the international bonus pool money, that, you know, that whole system that's been put in place is going to limit him to like $3.53 million max. And there's only three teams, I think, that even have more than $3 million, and it's the Twins, Rangers, and Yankees. But yeah, as it turns out, it probably doesn't matter at all because for anybody who's seen, you know, Lost in Translation or knows anything about Japanese culture, you know, celebrities endorsing products is still a massive deal in Japan, and Shohei Ohtani is going to have no trouble leveraging his fame here, particularly if he goes to New York, which is one of the reasons why I fear that's going to happen, but leveraging that into just, you know, a fortune aside from baseball. So he can kind of pick wherever he goes. Do you think that this is going to happen? Do you think he's going to end up with the Yankees, or is it going to be a little more interesting than that, hopefully?
Yeah, I know how I want it to play out.
I kind of like him to go to Seattle.
I kind of want him to go to Tampa.
Oh, well, sure. Well,
no, I know. Okay, hear me out.
Okay.
Tampa already has a player in their organization who both pitches and is an offensive powerhouse. So they already have the experience with a guy like that. And I also think that, like, the temperature and, like, a smaller market where he can be the big star may actually be appealing to him as well. Like, it's hard to say, and I it's like a one in a bajillion chance that he signs with Tampa, but I do like the idea.
Oh, sure.
Because I think either that, or I think he almost at one point out of high school had an agreement going with the Dodgers, and I think that kind of market would also be fairly appealing. I think what it comes down to is it's not going to be money in the end that wins him over.
Yeah.
It's not going to be who can pay the biggest amount going out of that initial pool. It's going to be who convinces him that they're the home to be in for the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be where he's most comfortable, where they're going to be able to adapt to him playing two positions the most. I've never seen anything like that questionnaire that his agent is circulating to teams to make them kind of write like a homework essay about.
You know what it reminded me of? There was this great post on Reddit last year where this guy has a new baby and he sends letters out to every single one of the 30 teams, basically asking them to audition for why they should be his son's new favorite team.
Ah.
And it was really interesting to see the work that some teams put into that. Like, I think the Nationals sent this baby a gift basket, like, whereas it's like, here's a onesie that you can wear and, like, you know, we'll look forward to having you at games and here's the reasons. And it was signed by, like, the manager at the time. It was incredible.
Wow, that is bizarre.
Basic form letters that are like, we don't feel the need to, like, convince people to become fans. And some people didn't reply at all.
Right. We're too cool for that, you know?
Yeah. So I thought that, I think it's going to feel very similar to that, except it's going to be teams tripping over themselves to convince this guy to come and play for them. Ah, God, I would just give anything to read those replies.
Oh, I know. I would love to read those. It would really be epic. You know, and the thing is, too, you'd also really get, like, a lot of insight into how each organization kind of sees itself. And because we've been very bored this offseason, like, I'm parsing all this minutia about, like, Tigers coaching staff and, like, the analytics department and all this kind of stuff. And it would just be kind of a way of, like, really getting, like, a view. Yeah, like, how do they think about themselves and what do they think they could do with Ohtani, you know?
Yeah. So I think that's what it's going to come down to. I think it's going to be who can make the case the best way that he'll be a good fit for the culture of the team. And in that sense, I don't know that I think the Yankees are going to be the right fit. I think you're onto something with the Mariners. I think the Mariners would be a good spot for him. I think the Dodgers would just be absolute, like, nightmare, because they're also in the running, I think, pretty high up for Stanton.
Yep.
And, oh, can you imagine
the
Dodgers organization with Ohtani, Stanton, Bellinger, like, Seager?
Yep. Like, yep. And then they got, you know, they got Walker Buehler coming, so they've got another really good young pitcher.
Like, the pitching staff, like...
Yep. And you know what's crazy about this is that, you know... Oh, yeah. I know. It's just doom for everyone, isn't it?
It's just, like, just give them the 2018 World Series right now.
I know. I mean, maybe, you know, you never know. Like, maybe he won't be as good as everyone thinks he will be, at least right away. But, oh, that would just be painful. I mean, that would just lock them in as the favorites next year. Absolutely. Especially if they added Stanton to it, which I think, you know, I read a couple things earlier that's, and it doesn't really sound like the kind of move that Friedman and Javi kind of, like, they just don't spend money like that. Like, I really think that's not as likely as some people do just because of the size of that salary. But, oh, my God, if they had both of them. And then what would that would mean? Like, what, Puig to Miami or something like that? Along with
some
prospects, obviously. Yeah.
Something that, Puig would get moved for sure, I think. Because Puig, your favorite. But, like, where does he fit in the future of the team, right? He never quite became what they wanted him to be.
Yeah.
It's tough. Very interesting to see how that plays. I think you're right. I think the Stanton contract's just going to be too big of a bite for them. But where do you see him ending up?
Stanton right now... Yeah. Where does Stanton go? I mean, I still think, like, the Cardinals are the team that seems to me like they most kind of have to have him. Like, it also feels like the kind of move that Dave Dombrowski, like, loves to make, but I'm not sure that
See Martinez going to the Red Sox.
Yeah, I could see JD going to the Red Sox, and I could still see Hosmer going there as well. Stanton, I don't see... The first thing is, like, I like Giancarlo Stanton. He's super fun to watch, but... I wouldn't judge him based on this year. Like, Giancarlo Stanton's a really good player, but is he, like, a lot better player than JD Martinez? I don't really feel that. Like, you know, in another year or two when Giancarlo Stanton's knees kind of give out and he's not as, you know, he loses a little bit of speed, they're going to look pretty similar. So, yeah, I mean, it just seems smarter to me, like, if your farm system's already kind of spent the way the Red Sox largely have spent theirs since Dombrowski got there. Yeah, why not just spend the money, you know? Just sign JD... and sign, like, Carlos Santana, who I think is the real sleeper of the offseason that a lot of people aren't looking at. Like, if I was even considering Hosmer, I would immediately, like, slap myself and just go sign Carlos Santana for a lot less money.
Yeah, but I totally think that Stanton's what's holding all of this up. because nobody's going to move on Martinez until they know where Stanton's going, and nobody's going to move, you know, it's just a stack.
Yeah.
And it's all log jammed behind that Stanton deal right now. But apparently now the org, now that I just read this earlier today, that the org is basically telling him, take the deal or we'll put you on a losing team.
Yep. Yeah.
Like they basically said straight up, take whatever trade we offer, or we're just going to trade everybody else on the team and you'll be the only person left.
Yeah. And so far, like, I mean, you know, Derek Jeter is just getting killed, you know, just getting killed daily on Twitter, because it just seems like, you know, he's taken over this team. And so far, like, the communication level that has been on display has been horrific. You know, you don't talk to your, you know, your star player, especially one that you're trying to get to accept a deal, you know, on those terms. Like, the man already put up with, you know, Jeffrey Loria as his owner and for whatever reason committed there for, and, you know, signed this huge deal because it was so big he couldn't resist it. And now you're going to, you know, kind of like try to force him out, you know, like that just seems like, you know, just to, for those things to even to get into public tells me, you know, that, Derek Jeter and his staff have a lot to learn about how these things work.
Stuff like saying that he hadn't even reached out to talk to Stanton.
Yeah, isn't that the first conversation you have when you take over the Marlins?
Either try to convince that guy to stay, or you're like, look, here's what we're going to do, but we want to make sure you're happy wherever you go. Like, we don't want to burn any bridges. But, like, I think my favorite thing that I read about it all day today was just that, like, Jeter's trying to, like, out-Loria. Like, he's doing a pretty good job so far of being deeply unlikable as an owner.
Yeah. He's like just going to burn the whole thing down and rely on, you know, retired New Yorkers who still love him, who all live in Florida now.
Sleeper agent just taking Marlins apart.
Yeah. You know, and I feel terrible for, you know, Marlins fans. Like, man, they've had it bad, you know, after, you know, Jose Fernandez dying. I mean, they thought, you know, they were close and, you know, that was just a huge blow. And they've also had to put up with one of the worst owners in the game. And now you find out, like, oh, Derek Jeter's taken over. Like, maybe things will be different. Maybe he'll be the Steve Yzerman of baseball. And so far, it's not looking good at all.
Yeah, he just hangs out in his office with his two iPads and his giant, like, Purell dispenser. Have you seen that picture of his office? It's insane.
I know, it's kind of creepy, isn't it?
It's just stark and empty, and there's a huge standing Purell dispenser.
Yeah, he needs, you know, he needs to talk to A-Rod about getting some Centaur-style artwork of himself up on the walls in there or something.
Just, like, giant pictures of, like, kids, and then a huge stack of baseballs to sign.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that never ends. And that's the thing, like, you know, Derek Jeter's not far enough removed for me yet to run a team. You know, he's still, like, beloved by a lot of people who, you know, I haven't really, like, switched generations yet, so I don't know. It just seems like it was all too soon, and he's taken over, you know, an organization that always has trouble anyway. So I'm just like, eh. So, you know, we could talk about Ron Gardenhier and the coaching staff, but I don't want to yet. I think we should.
No, good. Let's wait.
We'll just save that. So I think we're gonna wrap up episode one of the Bless You Boys podcast, starring Ashley and Brandon, and we will probably see you back next Tuesday. We're gonna try to kind of establish a regular schedule here. We've got some ideas for guests. Hopefully, we'll be getting Dan Dickerson, maybe a few other luminaries. We'll be willing to.
On.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I'll reach out to my boy Gabe Kapler. I had to drop that in there. but yeah, probably Mr. Kapler is too busy now that he's been hired as a manager and not for the Tigers. So we'll have to pass on that one. But yeah, we've got some ideas for stuff coming up. And we'll probably end up quizzing people on the site a little bit for what you want to hear. We're going to have some other staff members on here and there. And so we'll just kind of take it slow, play it by ear, just like this off season is going to go for the Tigers. And we'll see you next week. Thanks.
Bye. Bye-bye.